Christ, and happy Mother's Day. Sure appreciate mothers. Thought about it that, you know, it's Mother's Day is a time to recognize and remember our mothers. And so in a sense, it's a day we should all be having a happy Mother's Day. We're happy. There's a lot of different trails we could go down, but we're happy to have a mother. If we still have our mother alive. So far, I mean, my wife and I both have our parents alive, so we're sure happy about that. Mother's Day affects everyone. Every person has had a mother, and there's a pretty wide range there. You know, and today's world, the range can go pretty low. Maybe it has been that way for many, many years. You know, the worst end of the spectrum being an example of totally godlessness. That's not really what we're focusing on today, but mothers aren't perfect, and we have to recognize that too. Now, the rest of us are perfect. We want to think about Mother's Day as it should be. It's a day to remember the beauty of motherhood as it should be, and the way mothers fit into the plan that God designed. the plan that God designed them to be as a mother, it's a very beautiful thing. And it's when you stop and think about motherhood and the way it works out, if a mother is dedicated, we tend to take it for granted a lot, because that's just how mothers should be. And so I think it's just great that there is a day set aside, and there's a lot of interesting history about some of that, and I keep learning, but I don't want to spend the time digging into that today. So I just want to bless all you mothers today, and let's be thankful for our mothers, but bless the ones that are godly mothers. You know, real mothers have we'd say it's a natural blend of selfless, nurturing grace, and it runs deep. Runs to the very core of a mother's, what do you say, soul, the core of their being. And the rest of us kind of just expect that. And you say that's just, but it's in some ways it's an unexplainable thing. It's kind of like unmerited favor, right? It's reminds us of something else. God's grace. That's the one part of God's grace. There's enabling power as well. But think about the mother with a child, and the child didn't really merit anything, but he or she has the favor of their mother in a way that is, you know, without end. And so think about God's grace. It's so much the same. Maybe God, you know, that's just a little added. He designed motherhood, in a sense, to give us a picture of that unmerited favor and grace of God. Is that part of his? There's so many things like that in God's creation or God's way of putting something in place, that there's an expanding, ever expanding avenues, and that's just, to me, it's kind of a, so we start out just having that unmerited favor from our mother, and we don't even know that God's grace exists, like that's, but we just live in that. And so I just like to connect those. I just wanted to mention that so that somehow we can understand God and his grace to us. there's more to it than that, but in some of our study this morning, kind of genders up some of those thoughts. I was thinking just in, as Glenn was speaking about the, talking about God and his, the great difference between us and God. And I think it's in Isaiah where Isaiah was meeting, God was presenting this problem in his vision. And all Isaiah could say, and Isaiah was a very righteous man, but he could say, woe is me. He just, I think it's Isaiah, if I have that right. Woe is me, when he stood that close to God, which wasn't the extent of God. But so there's a lot of, when we think of grace, God's grace, and then we have a little taste of that in our mothers, and that's, I think that's beautiful. Even though mothers, they do everything for their children for a long time, there's very little that they can do to control things that might happen to their children. And you know, once the children starts doing, the child starts doing things of their own, and as it expands, there's some things that happen to them that the mothers have very little control over, and that's a hard thing to deal with sometimes. It actually can be a good thing too, and we don't want to go into all that, but you know, if a child goes beyond, grows and goes beyond where their mother has ever got in her life, that can be good. But so for mothers, and I want to talk, I want the message to be about mothers. We're going to go into a story that is a little strange for Mother's Day, but it's, the focus will be on a mother in that story and thinking about things that she couldn't control. For mothers, and I guess for fathers too, it connects to both of us, but children are an investment, and they're an investment of the heart and soul, a deep investment. And it can be scary when we have to let go. Some people hold back on that. But it's a blessing, and this should be the core of that, or the backdrop that gives us peace, is that we can trust God. We have a God we can commit these children to, and we need to do our part, but we can place them in God's hands, and that's a blessing. I have been trying to grow in that as my children get older and expand and get beyond more and more beyond the point of where I can influence and so forth. But there's many things that mothers can do, fathers can do, and we need to be doing those to help them walk the right path and so forth. Doesn't guarantee that nothing, whether physical or spiritually bad, will happen to them, but we still have to do our part. I thought about Mary, Jesus' mother. I know some people make her more than she should be in a sense, but she is a good example, and we don't want to shy away from using her. She knew from the start that she had a son that would have a unique place, I guess we'd say, in the world. But at the same time, thinking of the tender side of motherhood, it didn't keep, even though she had some of these warnings, or she knew, she didn't know everything, but it didn't keep that sword from piercing her soul. And it can sound like we're going to take the negative side, and the story I'm going to relate is a little bit negative in that sense, but there's positive to pull from it. So I want to recognize the strength and the depth of that grace and love that comes from a real godly mother. And we can see that in Mary. So many of these mothers, and it's very much the nature, there's lots of different ones in the Bible, but it's very much the nature of motherhood. And this is interesting to me, that we don't find much. You only have so many details, and you can kind of try to put yourself there and detect how this probably went, but you don't have many details. They're just the mother in the background that you have these little, just little things, and that's it. I think it was it Simeon that prophesied that a sword's going to pierce Mary's soul, and I don't know what all that carries. I just used, you know, we can use our imagination there. And that's the nature of motherhood, that they're kind of there in the background. They're not the known hero of the story necessarily. They're always there in the background. I think Mary's life was a life that in some senses we could say was heartrending sometimes. Maybe it was only a few years, but you know, her other sons ended up in the kingdom and serving God, and I don't know, didn't really think about that, but I think several of those were martyrs. John and James. But you know, we can focus on, you know, what trials may come, and that could put fear in our hearts. But I think at the same time, there's a soul-thrilling, right from that first angel visit, and Mary must have been a very, very godly young lady. But, you know, she took in what people were saying, and she thought about those, pondered them in her heart. She thought that over. And you know, can you imagine the soul-thrilling part, even though it was maybe, but just that soul, what it would do to be a part of that whole thing. This is the Messiah that's coming, and she, as that realization becomes greater in her heart, at the same time, it's not an easy life for her. She might have preferred just living in the backside of Nazareth. Nazareth was a kind of lower place, I think, and just having a quiet life. I mean, not being, having to deal with all this, but it's not necessarily always what we prefer that we get. So there's this story in the Bible is a good ways back from Mary's story. It's back in 2 Samuel 21. It's a intriguing story, and somewhat for our day today could be a little repulsive. You could call it ugly. And it does have to do with some of what was being discussed this morning about the law and so forth. And that's the part that we have struggles understanding. I would have, just reading through this, you get through it fast and kind of misunderstood exactly what was happening here. So I want to just quickly go through this and try to, we want to understand the story so we can understand a little more about this mother, a suffering mother, but she was dedicated. And it doesn't say that in here, but I'm using my imagination a little bit here. So we'll read the first 14 verses of 2 Samuel 21. Then there was a famine in the days of David, 3 years, year after year. And David inquired of the Lord, and the Lord answered, "It is for Saul and his bloody house, because he slew the Gibeonites." Now, I'm not going to do many comments till later, but these Gibeonites were the ones that tricked Joshua soon after they came into the land of Canaan. They came and acted like they came from a long ways away and convinced them to protect them, and they vowed before God that they would. And so that vow stands, and they couldn't back down on that. So that's the problem we have here, just so we can understand. These were those people that Israel needed to protect all this time. That was a long time back. But here we are, and David's king, and the Lord told him, because Saul mistreated the Gibeonites and slew, must have been quite a few. So let's go through the story here. Verse 2, and the king called the Gibeonites and said unto them, now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but the remnant of the Amorites. The children of Israel had sworn to them, and Saul sought to slay them in his zeal to the children of Israel and Judah. Wherefore David said unto the Gibeonites, "What should I do for you? And wherewith shall I make atonement, that ye may bless the inheritance of the Lord?" The Gibeonites said unto him, "We will have no silver nor gold of Saul, nor of his house, neither for us shalt thou kill any man in Israel." And he said, "What ye shall say, that will I do for you." And they answered the king, "The man that consumed us and that devised against us that we should be destroyed from remaining in any of the coast of Israel, let seven of his sons be delivered unto us, that we may hang them up unto the Lord in Gibeah of Saul, whom the Lord did choose." And the king said, "I will give them." But the king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, because of the Lord's oath that was between them, between David and Jonathan, the son of Saul. But the king took the two sons of Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, whom she bare unto Saul, Armoni and Mephibosheth. There's two Mephibosheths in the story, so keep that separate there. And the five sons of Michael, the daughter of Saul, whom she brought up for Adriel, the son of Barzillai, the Maholathite. And they delivered them into the hands of the Gibeonites, and they hanged them in the hill before the Lord. And they fell all seven together and were put to death in the days of harvest, in the first days of the beginning of barley harvest. And Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, took sackcloth and spread it for her upon the rock from the beginning of harvest until water dropped upon them out of heaven, and suffered or allowed neither the birds of the air to rest on them by day, nor the beast of the field by night. It was told David what Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, the concubine of Saul, had done. And David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son from the men of Jabesh-Gilead, which had stolen them from the street of Bethshem, where the Philistines hanged them when the Philistines had slain Saul in Gilboa. And he brought up from thence the bones of Saul and the bones of Jonathan his son, and they gathered the bones of them that were hanged. The bones of Saul and Jonathan his son buried they in the country of Benjamin, in Zelah, in the sepulcher of Kish his father, and they performed all that the king commanded. And after that, God was entreated for the land. So if you were like me, I would kind of scratch my head a little and went on when I read this in the Bible. Think about, in a sense, it seems like maybe it's two wrongs. Like, can two wrongs make a right? And maybe you didn't have that confusion reading through this, but we have to dig a little bit and to understand what, and you know, understand what was going on here. And some of this, I come across some things from Matthew Henry on this, so I'm going to use some of his explanation so it's really clear. I think we could probably sort of understand what's going on, but what we want to remember, what we want to think about in this story is Rizpah, this mother of the two men. But let's explain the rest of it so we don't have a wrong view of what was going on here. Number one, there was a famine during the reign of a righteous king, which meant that God wasn't pleased with something. And that's not how we look at problems today necessarily, but that's how it was in those days. David knew. David was aware. He was close to God. He knew that there was a problem. There was a famine, what did it say, for 3 years? The second thing is he prayed, and he asked God why there was a famine. And God answered that Saul had sinned against these people. And this was many years later. This is maybe toward the end of David's reign. So it was sometime in Saul's, I was thinking it was early in his reign. This is toward the end of David's reign. But this was still a problem. This was there, and it needed to be corrected. The third thing is David went to make atonement to the Gibeonites. He didn't take it on himself, but he went to them and said, how do we make this right? I think they knew the law, and they didn't ask for things for themselves. I don't think this was out of personal retribution necessarily. But they, and notice in verse 6, he said, no money and none of that. But they knew there needed to be a blood atonement for what Saul had done. And so in verse 6, it says, whom the Lord did choose. To me, that clears up any questions about, was David using this as an opportunity to get back at Michal? If you know that she was his wife at one point. And, you know, it kind of can look that way. But this, you know, it says, whom the Lord did choose. And they used, the Gibeonites brought that, and they used whom the Lord. It all fits the pattern of atonement. They hung them up before the Lord. It's a really kind of an ugly picture, but you know, it's, you know, we could talk about the ugliness of sin, the ugliness of evil, and before the atonement of Christ. We cringe, you know, we live in a day of forgiveness, and you know, we don't want anything like this happening. We don't really believe in this. It isn't right for us. This wasn't required. And so it's kind of an ugly story that I would read through fast, but the same price was paid for my sin. That's what it takes for my forgiveness. It's the same, it's actually an example of what was to come. So it makes it possible for us to be forgiven because somebody innocent died for my sin. These innocent men died for the sin of their father and grandfather. The price of innocent blood hanging before the Lord, as cursed before the Lord. As it says in Galatians 3:13, cursed is everyone who hangeth on a tree, as in Deuteronomy as well. But David as a king, the fourth thing is that David as a king was responsible to carry this out. And it can look like he picked selfishly, like he had retributions himself with the sons of Michal. Apparently, they weren't really her sons. They were her older sister's sons. Merib, I think her name was. She brought them up for her and her husband, Adriel. Merib's husband, Adriel. So I couldn't find that Michal had any children of her own, but these were her sister's sons. That's how I found it. So, and it made me wonder if it's possibly another punishment for Saul not giving Merib to David when he had promised, you know, after he killed the giant Goliath. I don't know. So it's possible these were the only ones left, actually, other than the other Mephibosheth that David had sworn to protect, and it's for Jonathan's sake. It's very possible that these were the only ones left. And how did the Lord choose them? I don't know, but there's seven of them. And we'll just leave that. I'm not going to make any speculations on that. The fifth thing is that the Gibeonites, they were the ones who hanged them before the Lord. And that's what, if nothing else, clears it up. That does, that everything was done before the Lord, by the Lord's design, before the Lord. He was very much involved, and I believe it was all part of God's design. And David was probably well aware that it could make him look kind of bad, at least the way we see it. I don't know if the people at that time, they might have understood that really clearly. So the sixth thing we want to think about is Rizpah, the mother of the two of the men. Just thinking about all that story, that thing that might say it's a great evil. I mean, it's the effect of evil and wrongs not done by her sons, but her sons had to pay the price. You think about innocent suffering. It's one of probably the prime things that people will throw in a person's face that believes in God or believes that God has control. I know there's many different. It's one of the things that rises up in just, you know, the righteous indignation. I don't know what all you want to call it, but it's that thing, that innocent suffering, wrongs done by others. In this case, the father, grandfather, I guess it was a father and grandfather. These men had died a long time ago. But these wrongs done by others that create this vacuum that sometimes requires the suffering of innocent. And you think of that as mothers, as fathers, and our children, and innocent suffering. And you probably have some things that come up in your mind. And we say, well, this whole scene, that doesn't happen today, so we don't have to worry about that, which is true. It's Christ paid the ransom for all of us, and we can have forgiveness through that. But there's also ways that innocent people suffer every day because of the wrongs of other people. And how do we deal with those? It's not physically. Sometimes it's physical suffering, but not a hanging like this, usually. But it might be more psychological or spiritual. We have this aged mother here in the middle of it. Can you imagine thinking about Mary and how a sword would pierce her soul? And think about this woman, this Rizpah. You know, we just, our common phrase is, it's just not fair. And it isn't fair. It's not fair. These men, they were good men. They were fine. They were good boys, faithful providers. I really don't have any idea, but they weren't dying for their sin. They were dying for their father and grandfather's sin. And it wasn't because of what they did. But here's a mother there. And she, well, they, you know, another, they probably had families, they probably had wives. Because this, they were probably fairly old, actually. I think this was an older woman and may have been her only two sons. And we would, many people, pretty much everybody would say that this isn't right. This is totally not right. We would protest. And what God said, it was right. And that can be a little hard to digest in our day to day. God said payment needed to be made. And I think this points forward to Christ's suffering, and there's a lot of parallels we could pull out here. But in a sense, and maybe completely, it isn't fair. That's true. It's not fair. The innocent suffering for the guilty getting off free. It isn't right in some ways, but God has used that to make things right. And if we say it isn't right, we assume that the world is going right, except for the innocent suffering. But the world, God says, the world lieth in wickedness. The whole world lieth in wickedness in 1 John 5:19. And if we enjoy that wickedness, then we're in the same boat. But what we're wanting to recognize is this probably mostly forgotten mother here, Rizpah, poor grieving mother. What could she do? This was not something she could stop. It's not something she should protest. So she did what she could. That's what she did. She recognized God's hand in this, I believe. Doesn't look like she's caused any problems. You know, mothers are protectors. They're advocates. They're partial to their children. But here we have Rizpah, we have Mary, as examples of dedication to God with their most precious most precious part of their existence. You know, there's many a mother who's tried to protect their child, maybe fathers too, tried to protect them, overprotect them, and it actually caused more problems. And I think we should be protectors. We should be providers, protectors. But real love will control our feelings of pity for the long term, the better long term goal of the child, or the good of the child, actually. But that's what, you know, we can't really, there's not much said about, and that's, like I said earlier, that's kind of the nature of motherhood. They're kind of there in the background, supporting, guiding, doing so many things that people just kind of expect. It's been that way all their lives, you know. So, but I do believe it's very important for mothers and fathers to teach their children that life on earth isn't always necessarily fair. And this is maybe, we would say, it's an extreme story of unfairness. But sooner or later in life, we're gonna have to deal with the fact that life isn't fair necessarily. Although at the same time, we have to be fair. We don't have a right to be unfair to others. Our children don't have a right to be unfair. Because life isn't fair, we still have to be fair ourselves. And so, in a sense, then, we can take the other side and say life is completely fair. We're all in the same boat. We all need Christ, and we all have a way to make it to glory. And so there's, God is fair, but the fairness that we expect sometimes is not always there, and we need to learn that. Jesus was our perfect example of dying to self and dying, physically dying for, he was innocent, physically dying for other people, for all of us. So Rizpah submitted. I don't know if she got the whole picture. We don't always have to get the whole picture. We have to know our place, God's place, and submit. And that's what I see her doing. But she did what she could. She did more than she had to. She wasn't required to do all this. I think she was a picture of love and support. We only see what happened after they died. But someone with that kind of dedication, you can imagine what all was happening before that. And I think she's a picture of just a beautiful motherhood, probably quite old. And the picture of love and support that she had there, even though it was probably very hard on her. It was the greatest test of her sons' lives as well, I would think, because they died. She spent up to 7 weeks in a tent out there, keeping the animals and stuff away from her sons' bodies to give them honor. And you know, if, I don't know if she communicated anything to them before they were taken, but if that's the kind of woman she was, her sons knew that they were okay. They could do this and they wouldn't have to worry. I don't know if they imagined that she would be there and she would do this thing, be out there day and night and not knowing how long she's gonna have to do this. There they were. She might have just said, I'm gonna do this till I die. She was out there and I think it was between like March and May from what I could find it. But anyway, the third thing about her is what she did got the king's attention. I think it shows David's soft heart. It moved him to give the bodies a decent burial, and he ordered that done. But I think she's an example of someone under probably the most trying experience a mother could face after all these years. And then Mary is another one. I wonder if Mary knew this story, and as she faced her own son's, all that he had to face before death and then dying on the cross like he did, and the ridicule and so forth. I wonder if she thought of this mother. You know, that's something probably Rizpah never really thought of, but she's an example that we can look at as someone who was dedicated, but left God do what needed to be done. She was still dedicated, and she stayed with that dedication. She didn't. I think if she would have been filled with bitterness and discouragement, I don't think she would have spent that time out there keeping the animals away from her sons. So these two women, I think they're quite an example of motherhood at its hardest, and they were faithful. And so the challenge, I guess, is the mentality of death to self and dedication. I would say that death to self is probably naturally, it seems like it would be naturally a part of motherhood, but you know, the unselfish, being unselfish for the sake of others. I think that's a very important part we have to impress on our children. But one thing that it says here, it says the end of the story, it says after that, God was entreated for the land. And there was this vacuum from the sin. And now that vacuum was filled and the price was paid. So for us today, and for mothers today, motherhood is an investment. Fatherhood is an investment of the heart, and it often costs more than what we expect. But at the same time, it brings much more blessing, much more expanded things than we ever could imagine and or expect. So I believe Rizpah probably experienced these things, the true blessings of her sacrifice. I really believe God blessed her for that, because that's how God is. He blesses this kind of dedication. And so we can't control all the circumstances that surround us or our children, but we can do our part. We can do what we can, just like Rizpah did. And so just want to leave that challenge and leave that blessing, special blessing for the mothers today. Thank you for your dedication and for finding your place in that. I just want a special blessing on you all. Let's kneel for prayer. Lord God, we do thank you for your great wisdom and the beautiful parts of your creation. Thank you for mothers today and for their dedication and for how you enable them to be a great example to all of us. Just bless them today in their work. Give them encouragement and guide them through the difficult times. Give them blessing for them. Their faithfulness today. Be with each of us. Help us to follow your plan and your will, and allow you to be the guide, and help us to do our part. Thank you for your faithfulness in Jesus' name.